Good morning. May it please the Court, I am Mark Wagner, and I represent the appellant, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. In 2015, this Court reversed an MSJ which dismissed the case on a discovery sanction and remanded for the District Court to consider two issues, whether the noncompliance regarded willfulness and bad faith and the availability of lesser sanctions. Now at this point, we're appealing an MSJ and a Rule 60, unfortunately based on another untimely filing, which I understand this Court's frustration. But if we look at the law...
I'm sympathetic to the District Court's frustration as well. This case has been going on for quite some time.
And I understand that I wasn't involved in any of the trial court cases, and it's not acceptable what happened. But that being said, I don't think the District Court followed the law of this circuit, which is what happened the first time, despite the District Court's frustration. I'll start with the MSJ. Unfortunately, it was filed a few days late. Relief was sought through a declaration, and the District Court apparently ignored it, which was an abuse. But eventually, at some point, the District Court was faced with this MSJ and was required to consider the five-factor test, which included Malone, which has a three-factor test, whether lesser sanctions were available. That was the key issue in the MSJ. We're not disputing the first factor. Within Malone, there's three factors. Did the District Court explicitly discuss less drastic sanctions? Did the District Court ever implement sanctions? Or the District Court failure to warn? Absent egregious situation, these three tests must be filed. None of them were. If you look at the court's ruling in 2013 and in 2017, the district court, never, ever, ever discussed any other sanction. Never said, oh, I could find money, there's a whole list of that Malone court list. He never discussed one of them in any of the orders. In 2013, the district court, just dismissed the case as an immediate discovery sanction, which is why it was reversed. That's what happened again now. No other lesser sanctions were implemented at any point.
The second time around, it's not a discovery. Was it a discovery sanction?
Well, that's the issue. The District Court basically said, let's have an MSJ on the two issues that this court issued a mandate. There was never reopening discovery. There was never a status conference. It was, let's go look at those two. And what the court says is, oh, I look at lesser sanctions. At that point, the court was supposed to consider the three-factor test in Malone, but never implemented. Just said, I found lesser sanctions won't work, and just dismissed the case again. And so the court never said, these are some alternatives and I reject them. The court never said, this is what I'm trying, and I've tried it and it didn't work. He never tried it. He dismissed it the first time. This court said, no, that's not okay. And he just said, oh, I think it works, and dismissed it again. And he never said...
I don't think he has to try it first. He has to explain why lesser sanctions wouldn't be adequate in the case.
Which was not discussed. I agree the court was required to do it. And the three factors, look at all three of them. And he didn't do any of them because at no point did he say, well, this is what I'm doing. I'll give you 30 days to do discovery. If you don't disclose the damages, I'm dismissing the case. Give a warning. What the district court did is looked back at 2013 and said, I think my ruling was right then. Dismissed without any discussion, any warning, any implementing of lesser sanctions. The other problem is...
Well, one of the orders, the district court had indicated that there wasn't the adequate production regarding damages by the deadline. So this case started in 2012.
I believe
in 2013, discovery deadline passed, no damages discovery. And the district court in one of its orders said, still, even on remand, there wasn't evidence of damages.
Well, that's part of
the issue. Ultimately, what does it matter?
Well, and I'll address that first. The issue on remand had nothing to do with damages. The issue was lesser sanctions available? This was a discovery exclusion dismissal. At some point on appeal, this with the Rule 60 issue, the then court says, well, it doesn't matter because there's no damages evidence. But this court originally went back and said, well, no, just because there was no damages disclosure, you can't throw out the case. Which means that they had to give them an opportunity to remedy that situation. The district court didn't say, let's have a CMC, let's open discovery, you have an opportunity now to disclose the late time damage evidence. But you don't need damages evidence through documents. There's no law that says it only has to be through documents. So the district court then didn't open that issue. The district court said, my only issue is this lesser sanction issue. And the one.
Is it correct that to date there's been no documentary damages disclosed, but what you're saying is that we could show it some other way, through testimony or, I suppose, in a breach of contract, try to argue for nominal damages or something along that line?
Well, initially, the original attorneys from years and years ago said that they disclosed evidence that they believed to be documentary that supported damages. The defendants argued that it is not supporting of damages, and the district court, when looking at an unopposed MSJ, agreed. So I think at this point, new damages documents have to be disclosed, so I agree it wasn't 100% done. But there's been no opportunity in the last 5 years to do that once this went up and went back down, because the court just jumped back onto the two factors without saying, okay, I'll give you the opportunity, or tell me what your damages are in a declaration, or who's your testimony, because that had nothing to do with the MSJ. On the Rule 60, the court says, well, whether I made a mistake or not, it doesn't matter. You have no damages evidence as of now. But that had nothing to do with the MSJ, so it's improper to, after the fact, and then go back and say, well, this has nothing to do with sanctions. This has to do with whether you have damage or not. It's just moving the ball, which was not fair at that point. The other problem is the district court, in deciding whether it was lesser sanctions, to see, look at other cases. Look, no doubt my client and their clients have been involved in a handful of lawsuits. But what the district court did when the defendant submitted it is said, oh, okay, well, you missed a deposition in this case, in the state court, with a different lawyer and a different party. I'm not talking about the same parties, different entities. And then they said, oh, well, this entity, they're related entities. I'm not going to dispute that. But the district court then said, well, these related entities had different issues in this other state court. And in another case years ago, this had this happen. And so the district court was saying, well, oh, okay, I just find that you just don't follow the rules, but was considering other cases years before, and also considered actions that happened years after the exclusion. If he's looking back and say, well, in 2013, there was no, I find my decision was fine in the first place, how can you look at what happened 3 years later? It's unreasonable to think that your conduct 3 years later in a different case with a different lawyer and a different entity will be held against a different party, a different entity, different lawyers in a different case. And so the Ninth Circuit has made clear when a district court considers evidence, other prior discovery evidence, it has to be of the same type of nature. Otherwise, it's an abuse of discretion. And there are plenty of cases that say that. No case has said, and we can consider it by different entities with different lawyers and different parties in other cases. Every single one of the cases I cited, the district court didn't cite any, and the defendants, I could not find a case where it was proper to consider evidence in other cases and other cases with other parties that just happen to be related. That's the point of corporations are different. Just because you're related to any doesn't mean that in a state court case outside of the federal that years before or years after should be considered. So I think the district court, by not considering lesser, never discussed it. I've read these orders 100 times. It was never explicitly discussed, never tried, and never given a warning and said, if you don't do damages evidence within 2 minutes, well, I'm sorry, within 2 weeks, dang. So I'd like to, unless you want to court, I'm going to reserve my rebuttal time and get to the Rule 60 issue, but it seems like we're focusing on that. But just quickly on that, everybody agrees the pioneer factors were supported, so the court should have given an opportunity for the MSJ opposition to be considered. Except for, he said, oh, I look at the merits. No Ninth Circuit court has approved that, and every Ninth Circuit case that has come out and district court has said the Ninth Circuit does not look at the merits. Therefore, that should not have been a factor, and therefore the Rule 60 should have been granted. The MSJ opposition should have been considered. And again, it had nothing to do with damages. The issue was the sanction. So the lack of damages on the MSJ op is irrelevant because the MSJ opposition had nothing to do with damages. I'll reserve my time for a rebuttal, unless you have any more questions.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Daniel Kottman for appellees. I'd like to respectfully submit that the appellant in this case elevates form over substance entirely. If you look carefully at the record, which I'm sure this court will, the very fact that there's no damages evidence is dispositive. And in the interest of judicial efficiency, Judge Wright should be permitted to make that kind of a judgment. They argue that they never had a chance to present evidence, but if you look at what Judge Wright did in his December 17th, 2015 order, He said, here, the court finds that it would be aided in spreading the mandate by a rebriefing of the issues and by presentation of any additional relevant or clarifying evidence. He asked them to bring all evidence. He could have just simply taken on remand, considered R&R sales, talked about the availability of lesser alternative sanctions, and been done with it. He did not do that. He reopened the matter so that they could a full rebriefing could happen. And even in spite of that opportunity, they didn't come forward with any evidence. So that's why I say their arguments elevate form over substance. When you start looking at the form and the nuances with respect to what their arguments are, it's saying they didn't apply R&R sales correctly, meaning the judge didn't explicitly discuss the availability of alternative sanctions. They cite the Malone opinion, which talks about a preference for those being discussed. But there's no explicit requirement for such discussions. And here, where the judge has a history with the parties, and it's a
long...
Well,
but there has to be some yardstick, you know, to measure abuse of discretion. If he doesn't do that, what should we go by?
Well, I would say that he tried lesser sanctions in this case by reopening the matter and letting a full rebriefing happen.
Well, it wasn't a full rebriefing if he limited the motion for summary judgment. And I'm reading the portion where you're reading. The court finds will be aided by rebriefing of the issues and by the presentation of additional relevant or clarifying evidence. Accordingly, defendants shall file a revised motion for summary judgment on only the issues that the Ninth Circuit has instructed the court to consider on remand. So those issues would be consideration of availability lesser sanctions and whether the conduct was willful or in bad faith. So was that an open invitation to Tory Rafik to come forward with the damages evidence that it originally failed to produce?
I believe so. And if you look at what the judge did consider, although they make big hay of the fact that their opposition was excluded for lateness, the reply brief, which we filed, includes their damages evidence, and Judge Wright's order looks at it and considers it and finds it insufficient.
What about Judge Wright's reliance on abuse or misconduct from other cases? Is there a case that supports consideration then? Do you have a case that you can cite to me?
I do not have a specific case I can cite to you. What I can tell you
is... There is no law that supports that, is it? Looking to other conduct in other cases.
Keep in mind that the conduct in the other case that he was looking...
This is not a state bar disciplinary proceeding. It's, you know, moving this case forward, right?
But I understand that. But the conduct that he was looking at was the preceding case to this case in his very same courtroom with the very same parties. So what the second case was about is a breach of the settlement that was from the first case. So he knew these parties well.
Excuse me.
Sorry, Your Honor.
I thought we were talking about a state court proceeding.
There was a litany of various malfeasances listed by us. A very good chunk of those is from the preceding case that was in Judge Wright's courtroom. My argument is that that's a sufficient basis. Even if it's not a sufficient basis, he still looked at the conduct that happened here, which is that they filed a late brief, that they didn't disclose any documents, that they, you know, exhibited in his courtroom.
There's nothing in the record, is there, that he... One of the Malone factors is, you know, whether or not lesser sanctions would be sufficient, and whether and how the district court explains whether lesser sanctions are or are not sufficient. The district court doesn't address that at all, does he?
He explained in his order why he believed they wouldn't work based on his experience with the parties.
Show me where it is, his order.
You have to give me a minute to gather it, Your Honor.
Well, your time's running. You might as well move on to something else.
Okay. If they gather that for you, Your Honor, I'll have it brought up. I think my point is that my read of Malone is that explicit discussion isn't required. It's preferred. And even if Judge Wright didn't explicitly discuss such, it's a preference, not a requirement. The other issue is if you look at, you know, Rule 60B, his denial there was proper because the language of Rule 60B is that the court may relieve a party. So he did the pioneer factors.
Can I follow up on Judge Tashima's question? Because I want to make sure that I understand the record. The district court gave an explanation of why it thought lesser sanctions would be inadequate. And my issue with this case is whether that shows proper consideration of the alternative of lesser sanctions. The district court's explanation was that lesser sanctions would be ineffective as a deterrent because of the party's continued disregard for the federal rules of civil procedure, and that's on the last page of his summary judgment order. So that's the analysis. But in concluding that the parties continually disregarded the federal rules of civil procedure, the district court seemed to rely on other cases as establishing a pattern of disregard for discovery rules and court rules such as filing summary judgment late and so forth. So that then gets back to the question of whether it's proper to consider other cases.
I think he considered more than other cases. I think he considered the conduct in his own courtroom. If you look at some of what he cites, there's also the conduct that happened in his own courtroom with respect to this case, which is, one, no documents were ever produced, not a single document. Two, they filed their opposition late. He saw the same pattern of conduct he saw before. So while he referenced prior cases from his courtroom, I don't think his ruling was based solely upon just the conduct of prior cases. It was also based on the conduct here.
One of the most commonly considered lesser sanction for discovery violation exclusion is exclusion of that evidence. So instead of dismissal of the case, which is the ultimate punitive sanction, he could have said, okay, well, if you didn't produce evidence of damages, then I'm not going to permit late disclosure, and then the parties can either, you know, proceed to briefing on summary judgment with what they have, or proceed to trial with inadequate damages evidence. Was there any discussion of considering that particular sanction?
There's no explicit discussion by him of that particular sanction. What he
by
did
the
do,
parties? Any requests by the parties?
They did not file a single document request or make any effort to disclose the additional damages evidence. That was brought in on the motion for summary judgment in their opposition initially, past the fact discovery cutoff.
Did you ask for that as a lesser sanction?
We did not. The judge looked at that evidence and fully considered it. I recognize that excluding that evidence would have been an option, but it would have been back to form over substance. It would have gotten them to the same result, which is that it was insufficient evidence to prove damages.
Where do you get this notion that the Malone factors are only a preference and not a requirement?
From the opinion, Your Honor.
From what?
Let me read
from the
you.
Opinion?
I do. I have it right here. It says, and I'll read it into the record, we have indicated a preference for explicit discussion.
Well, what page of the opinion are you on?
Sorry, Your Honor. It's page 5.
Page 5. Is that 833 Fed Second, page 5? Is that what you mean?
3 Fed Second, 128.
128?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Read it to me.
We have indicated a preference for explicit discussion by the district court of the feasibility of alternatives when ordering dismissal.
But that's not itself a holding. After all, the opinion goes on to just, you know, a couple pages discussing the five factors. And furthermore, it depends on Thompson. Thompson doesn't say it's a preference. It cites Thompson for these factors, right? Thompson doesn't say these are preferences, are they, and not requirements?
It says we have never held...
No, Thompson.
He's citing People versus Reyes here.
So what you're saying is your position is that the district court's failure to consider the five factors explicitly is not a ground for reversal. Is that your position?
My position is that he was not required under this precedent to discuss the availability of lesser sanctions explicitly.
Well, lesser sanctions is just one of the five factors, isn't it?
Are you referring to the Pioneer test, Your Honor?
I'm referring to the five factors that are, set forth in Malone. Right? Malone said the district court must weigh five factors in determining whether to dismiss a case for failure to comply with the court order. It goes on to list them, citing Thompson.
Right, and the fifth one is the availability of less drastic sanctions.
Right, but that's not the only one. He didn't discuss a lot of the other. He didn't discuss factor four, for instance, the public policy favoring disposition of cases on the merits. Why shouldn't this case be decided on the merits? He didn't discuss that, did he?
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, which ones did he discuss? Because Malone says explicitly a district court must waive five factors in determining whether to dismiss a case. Explicitly discuss them. No, I don't understand why he turned that into just a preference, a judge can do it, a judge can't do it. It makes the case meaningless to me.
I understand your point, Your Honor.
All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think I'm out of time, so I'll have to let it rest at that, unless you have
any more
questions.
Thank you.
I'm just going to briefly address it. Malone was not a preference. That is just simply not correct. It's required unless there's an egregious situation, for example, fraud in the court. In countless cases, they talk about it as an abuse of discretion, and at no point is it a preference.
The consideration of those factors are required, but
in Hamilton,
explicit discussion may not be required.
Well, first of all, the five-factor test that originally came from Wanderer, the court did not discuss it. The lesser sanction, which is number five, then gets into three parts. In Hamilton, Calvert says we hold it was an abuse of discretion for the district court to dismiss the action without considering.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Consideration is required. Explicit discussion is preferred but may not be required.
And I believe countless cases talk about explicit discussion is required unless there's a narrow exception that explicit discussion is required. It's not just a consideration. That is, in exceptional circumstances, it's not required, but otherwise it is. And
what
I don't
is that? Where does that statement come from? What case?
Well, that was the Hamilton-Cobber case, but I've cited reasonable exploration of possible and meaningful alternatives is required. Failure to explicitly consider lesser – explicitly consider means you have to not just say it in your head. It has to be discussed. Otherwise – and again, the Hamilton-Cobber case talks about it. U.S. Luan v. Hughes Aircraft discuss it. Failure to explicitly consider less drastic sanctions is a fatal flaw in the district court's decision to dismiss as a sanction. So it is not a preference. And then back to the other point, it was not an open invitation to disclose damages. The district court made clear, I want briefing on this limited issue related to the lesser sanctions and the two issues from this mandate. It was not, let's talk about damages and witnesses and everything else for the case. The order was explicitly limited, and I don't believe it was an invitation to just start dropping in other things. Back to the point, I have found, and nobody has cited a case that says consideration of conduct in state cases by other entities, by other parties, with other judges can be considered. Defendants point out, some of it was from this case. Well, that's insufficient. How do we know? What if he considered one thing from this case and threw out the other 20 things? Maybe the court would have acted differently. Also, again, considering even things from this case from years ago, there's no way that you can know and have due process thinking, in a case that was finalized and dismissed, my conduct from that 2 years or 3 years or 4 years later will be considered because I happen to be back here again on a separate lawsuit. It was not the same case up and down a remand. It was just a separate lawsuit. It happened to be the same judge, but no case says that. And the point is that due process requires you to understand that my conduct in this case may affect this case.
Let me ask you one question about 60B ruling.
Okay.
It says that your side did not submit any evidence regarding a dispute of material fact as to whether it failed to produce documents. I assume that refers to the at the time of the summary judgment motion.
I believe the Rule 60 order is looking back at the MSJ order and saying at that time it was not disputed and citing to their statement of facts. So by accepting the Rule 60, he's looking back on an MSJ order that made clear that the opposition wasn't considered, and therefore...
Well, the part they read from the Jim Judge Wright's order on summary judgment was that you should submit evidence on this question at the time you brief summary judgment.
If I understand your question correctly, when the judge was ruling on his 60B and said, I find Pioneer, he was saying, okay, forget about that, let's look at the merits. And then he went back and looked at the MSJ and said, let's look at the merits. But at the time he wrote the MSJ order, the court said, I'm considering it unopposed. Their position is, well, when it was opposed, even if it was untimely, they should have put in all the damages evidence. And my point is...
What I want to ask you is, you did after... There was a two-day delay. It was 2 days late. Then, right after that, 8 days, I think, there was some kind of an affidavit. And the affidavit referred to evidence that could be submitted?
Evidence would be submitted, but the affidavits in the opposition were not on the issue of damages because the briefing and the MSJ had nothing to do with the damages. If you read the MSJ order, forgetting about that it was late, it never talks about damages. It does not address damages. When we get to the Rule 60 and he says, oh, okay, I have to now consider, he goes, well, it doesn't matter because there's no damages evidence. But at no point in the mandate from this court, the instructions to the defendants to file the MSJ, the MSJ briefing, or the MSJ order, is anybody asked or told to talk about damages? So then months later, when they're looking at the Rule 60B and says, oh, okay, they are relieved from the mistake of being a few days late, let's look back at it and says, okay, I have to grant leave. But it doesn't matter.
It did say that it would be helpful to the court if you brief any additional relevant or clarifying evidence. So that was your opportunity to say, hey, dismissal is a really drastic remedy. There's lesser alternatives. This is our evidence of damages, and that's why it's so drastic to do dismissal. But despite opposing the summary judgment late, you still didn't come up with evidence of damages, and the district court was swayed by that. So what's wrong with that? The district court said, hey, I'm getting this case back from the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit said I erred in failing to consider less drastic alternatives. Brief it. Bring the evidence forward so that I can now explicitly consider the evidence of lesser damages. No damages evidence was submitted. The district court said, well, you really wouldn't win on the merits anyway.
And I understand that part. I'm not going to say that this thing was handled perfectly. It wasn't me.
But that's part of the district court's frustration, that everybody's passing the buck. Oh, it was my paralegal. Oh, prior counsel failed to disclose evidence. And at some point, it's got to end.
I agree. But the MSJ issue, if the issue is only about lesser sanctions, I understand your point. You could have talked about damages, but the court's order was clear. Any evidence related to these two issues, it's made clear these are my only two issues I'm willing to get into. And so damages was not an issue. Whether you have damages is irrelevant to the question whether lesser sanctions are available. They just have nothing to do with each other. The court, if you read the MSJ order granting, he didn't say I'm granting it because there's no damages. He granted it because I find lesser sanctions don't work. Then, when he got to the Rule 60, everybody briefed it. Then his order said, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm adding a new test, which has never been cited in the Ninth Circuit and has been rejected by the Ninth Circuit, and says, oh, okay, by the way, there's no damages. Well, that wasn't briefed. They weren't given an opportunity to brief it because that's not a factor considered. And the Ninth Circuit, in multiple opinions, have rejected that factor. So he's going back and looking at it retroactively, saying, this had nothing to do with damages. I didn't ask for damages. I didn't dismiss based on damages. You're right, I should have considered that opposition. Oh, but it doesn't matter, there's no damages in that opposition. Well, it would never have been in that opposition because it wasn't the issue. And the last point is...
Did the affidavit that was submitted 8 days late refer to damages?
I honestly can't tell you offhand. But I would just add is he said there's no evidence of damages in documents. Okay, that's fine. Even if the court said, I'm going to dismiss all, you cannot use any documents for damages. There's nothing preventing a witness from talking, these are my damages. Jury could say yes, judge could say no, but just to hold that as a matter of law because I throw out these documents, therefore there are no damages, which was not the issue briefed, not requested, and not discussed. Again, due process. The judges are considering other issues. He didn't like this case and wanted it gone, and was saying, okay, never mind, no damages. But where's the rule that if you don't have documents, you have no damages? That's just not the law, and it wasn't briefed, and he didn't ask for a briefing. And he specifically said, this is not the issue. I don't think you can have a Rule 60 ruling back looking at an MSJ on an issue not briefed, not the MSJ. Because the MSJ ruling had, does not mention the word damages at all. And therefore, the Rule 60, considering the MSJ, cannot be based on a different issue without giving them an opportunity to brief it. And he didn't. And they point out they submitted all the damages evidence on reply. Another violation. You cannot submit hundreds or thousands of pages on a reply to an MSJ without giving the other side an opportunity to say, oh, you have now an opportunity. They've just admitted it. It's clear in the briefs.
I think we've let you go halfway okay. Over
time. All right. Thank you very much.
Case disargued will be submitted.